In December of 2015, Emory University professor George Yancey wrote the New York Times a letter called Dear White America. He wrote it to get white people to talk about and observe the ways they benefit from racism. This past April, Yancey released his book, Backlash, What Happens When We Talk Honestly About Racism in America. It's a response to the bitter criticism that he received after he sent in that original letter to the New York Times, and he's with us now. George, real quick, short version, what'd you say in that original letter in 2015?
Okay, the original letter, which was published on Christmas Eve, a wonderful, wonderful day, called Dear White America. Basically, the idea was to communicate to white people, and by the way, I never used the expression, all white people are racist. I simply said, to be racist in America, rather, to be white in America is to be racist. It's just the way in which to be male in America, or to be male, period, living under patriarchal conditions or androcentric conditions, is to, in fact, be sexist. So there are ways in which I, as a male, have internalized all sorts of pornographic notions, pornographic gazes. There are ways in which I'm positioned structurally within a society of patriarchy that has implications for women who don't have the same kind of power that I have. So on that basis alone, I am sexist. So I was in the Dear White America article, that was my way of sort of outing myself and creating a potential bridge between me, creating a kind of vulnerability and communicating to white people that, look, to be a good white person, in other words, not to be part of the Klan or to be part of the neo-Nazis, mm-hmm. not to be those whites in Charlottesville, right, the so-called bad ones, one cannot identify with them, and yet one continues, in virtue of being white, to have internalized all sorts of affective, ideological, stereotypical assumptions about black bodies and bodies of color, such that one cannot, as it were, extricate one from all of those internalized forms of racism. And also, right. one is part of a system of white systemic privilege. So given those conditions, I can't imagine what it's like for any white not to be participating in the structure of white supremacy.
So you wrote all of that in a letter to the New York Times published Christmas Eve 2015, and then I bet you just had a delightful Christmas day as you watched the comments flow in. What did people say in response?
Absolutely. And I think what made it so powerful is that it came out on Christmas Eve, and I refer to it as a love letter or a gift, both a gift and a letter of love. And of course, being Christmas morning, white folk had to wake up, and people of color had to wake up and read this piece that was designed as a gift. Well, immediately thereafter, I began to receive hate mail in the form of voicemails, in the form of email messages at my university, in the form of letters, handwritten, postcards. There were white supremacist or alt-right websites that discussed the piece. I must have been called, and I'm going to use the word nigger, over 1,000 times. There was one website where this individual responded to Dear White America, and she just wrote, nigger, 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 nigger. And it sort of went down the page like that, right? Maybe 40 times or more. I was referred to as a hood rat, a pavement ape. I was told to kill myself immediately, so to commit suicide. I was referred to as excrement. At one point, someone said, I have a big mouth and that it needs to be shut permanently, or I might find myself on a cold slab. I was told to go back to Africa immediately. In fact, just 3 weeks ago, the secretary of the dean at Emory University of the College of Arts and Sciences got a call that said, and I quote, where is that nigger Yancey, end quote. I'm coming to knock his expletive head off. I'm coming now. And at which point I had to have police presence. And throughout after the publication of Dear White America, I had to have police presence at the university that would sort of hang around my classrooms and hang around my office. When I gave public talks outside of Emory, I had to have police presence. So in short, Dear White America touched a very sensitive nerve, I think, in white America, and particularly in white people, because it asked of them to, as James Baldwin says, it asked them to engage in a form of love that removes the masks that we fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live with. Or as bell hooks says, love is telling the truth about ourselves and sharing it with others. So what I wanted was a collective form of white vulnerability. I wanted whites to come to terms with telling the truth about themselves in such a way that we haven't in America. And that conversation about race has never happened under Obama's tenure of 8 years, and it's certainly not going to happen under Trump's administration. In fact, it has become far more exacerbated.
We're speaking with George Yancey. He's a philosophy professor at Emory University, and he's the author of the new book, Backlash, What Happens When We Talk Honestly About Racism in America. And it's about exactly what it sounds like. So you put out this letter in 2015. You got that horrendous, terrifying backlash, and you had to get security. Surely you were expecting some of that, right?
Yes and no. Meaning, I assume that, you know, white folk would disagree, right, with it. They would challenge me. But what I didn't expect, and believe it or not, actually, a white colleague of mine, said that, surely you expected this to happen. And of course, the problem with her having said that is that there's a way in which she was saying that I was not being genuine. But I was being genuine when I said that I didn't expect that. I mean, I didn't expect to be called the N-word hundreds, thousands of times. Yeah. I didn't expect, you know, to have someone write me and say, oh, let's put a meat hook in Dr. Yancey and then say, now use your imagination. Right. I mean, that is a level of virulence and physical violence that for me is unconscionable. So while I expected blowback, right, or backlash in the form of, let's say, criticism or maybe saying that Dr. Yancey is the racist, not us. Of course, I did receive that as well, but not the form of blatant, unmitigated violence to my person. I did not expect that. Particularly as we, you know, we're in the 21st century, 2018, or in that point, 2015. But of course, I've received those nasty messages from 2015, now 16, 17, and 18. Oof. I did not expect that level of blatant and raw violence. But what I want to communicate in the new book, Backlash, is that we shouldn't be surprised that there is this subterranean sort of consciousness or unconsciousness in white America, where these beliefs are still very much maintained, that these affects are very much real and very much present.
Yeah. Explicit racism like that has been so thoroughly banished from the public square in America, from polite society, or at least had been until quite recently. Do you ever wonder if maybe that very fact that I just described has actually made it more intense in its underground manifestations?
That's an excellent point. In fact, So in other words, there's a way in which post-civil rights movement, there's a way in which there's a kind of intolerance for certain explicit forms of racism, verbally or otherwise, right? But at the same time, and in a way, that kind of civil, post-civil rights, civil discourse has in many ways, I think, helped to repress the kinds of racism that are still underlying this nation, and it's part of its social DNA. So I think under President Trump, who represents for me the kind of id of, if you think about Freudian psychoanalysis, Trump is sort of the id of the structure of the mind, and it's unregulated, right? So it gets to say anything it wants without the ego, the superego guarding it. But here's what's interesting. Even though there are those spectacular and explicit forms of racism, forms of implicit racism have never ceased to exist. So in other words, when I walk into a supermarket or store followed by a white guy who also walks into the store, when the white security guard follows me and not that white person, there's a way in which my body is being truncated, it's being stereotypified, it's being racialized as the body that is going to steal something, whereas the white body gets to shop and move through that space with ease, or what I call effortless grace. But the interesting thing is that white body gets to shop precisely because my body is stigmatized as the body that needs to be followed. So what we have then, while we don't have the spectacular, explicit forms of racism, although we have the killings of Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, we still get those forms of microaggression from white people all the time. So it's not as if racism has ever disappeared. It's just that post-civil rights, whites have, in some sense, bought into a certain kind of if you will, polite kind of racism that belies their best intentions, but still has this tremendous and traumatic impact on Black people and people of color.
Do you regret getting this all started with that letter that you published in 2015?
No, not at all. In fact, I've had students of color ask me, you know, Dr. Yancey, why do you continue to write letters like this? In other words, why do you continue to talk to white people about their racism when, in fact, as they believe, my students, that whiteness or white privilege or white power or white racism will never end? And my answer to that is that I write these letters, I address white America because I have four Black sons whom I deeply love. And I also address white people because I know that there are white children who have not completely succumbed to certain forms of white racist habituation and certain forms of white racist rigidity that I think still need freeing. So I don't regret it because at the end of the day, it's an effort to free white people of their racism. It is what I would call, and James Baldwin would call, freeing white people of white innocence. So on my model, my way of thinking about it, whether it was in the letter Dear White America or now in the new book, Backlash, is that white people can't hide behind innocence. In fact, Baldwin says that innocence is the crime precisely because white people claim innocence. But there is no white innocence, just as there is no male innocence in a male patriarchal society. Look, I'm married to a woman, right? I'm a husband. But being married to a woman doesn't exempt me from being a sexist. In fact, marriage in many ways is predicated on patriarchy. So my role in that relationship's in that relationship in terms of the internalized sexism that I bring to that relationship, in terms of the rigidity of gender roles, whether it's my failure to wash dishes or my failure to cook or my getting upset that my wife didn't take my last name, for an example, right? All of that is an expression of male supremacy, even though it's not the kind of, let's say, Harvey Weinstein or the Bill Cosby kind of racism or sexism, rather.
Talking with George Yancey. He's a philosophy professor at Emory University. He's the author of the new book, Backlash, What Happens When We Talk Honestly About Racism in America. Professor Yancey, as you were going through all of this, how did it change what you were doing in the classroom at Emory?
Actually, it didn't. What the letter itself, Dear White America, and the book now, Backlash, is consistent with the pedagogical approach that I've always taken. So for an example, in my classrooms, I do what's called parrhesia. Parrhesia is a Greek word that means fearless speech or courageous speech. And it's the same thing that Socrates engaged in. It's the same thing that Martin Luther King engaged in. It's the same thing that Fannie Lou Hamer or Audre Lorde engaged in. But also, I've always required my students, and since I've taught at predominantly white universities, I've required them, white students, to engage in fearless listening. And fearless listening is this sense of remaining still, remaining silent, and being prepared to tarry with that which is profoundly uncomfortable. And the issue of racism and whiteness is profoundly uncomfortable to white people. It's almost as if one is using the N-word. That's the impression I got when I was talking to white students, for an example, that term just, they don't like it, and it's fair enough, but it's very descriptive. And so what I've done or what I've discovered is that it's important when one thinks about the very nature of education, comes from the Latin educare, which means to lead out. What we really want our students to do is to lead out of a certain form of ignorance into the light of a certain kind of self-understanding. But that self-understanding is often very, very painful. That's the thing about knowledge and self-reflection, that coming to terms with who one is, one's own identity, is to be painful. I mean, this is what it means to teach with passion. When one thinks about the term passion, it means to suffer. So it seems to me if one is undergoing a genuine form of education or educare, leading out, then that sense of suffering is absolutely important. Because for me, as a philosopher, I now see philosophy not so much as a site of wonder, but also as a site of suffering, because it attempts to take on the problems of the world, whether that problem is, you know, homophobia, whether it's Islamophobia, whether it's sexism, whether it's racism. You have it. The idea is to bring to bear on my students as much reality as I can, such that when they leave that classroom, they can't sleep, right? The idea is if my students tell me it's hard for me to sleep because of our day, what we talked about in class, I had a successful day.
So, Professor Yancey, last question to you. Let's be honest. You're on public radio right now, so you're probably talking to a whole lot of white people who fancy themselves good ones,
yes.
ones who want to do the right thing. What is your message to them about how they should engage with their own implicit or explicit racism?
Yeah, sure. First, I'd say that realize that you are not part of the Klan. I'm hoping that many of you are not neo-Nazis. You are not the ones who were in Charlottesville who were, you know, protesting and trying to further instantiate and support white nativism or xenophobia. But I would say nonetheless that look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, what is so important about being white in America? And realize that your life, that your whiteness protects you. It renders you immune from the kinds of violence and hatred at a macro and a micro level that people of color and black people are experiencing every day. And I would say that white people need to commit to learning more about their whiteness through the voices of black people and people of color. They need to develop a form of double consciousness where they begin to see their lives through our eyes, just as men have to develop a form of double consciousness where we see our sexism through the eyes of women.
That's George Yancey. He's a professor of philosophy at Emory University. He's the author of the new book, Backlash, What Happens When We Talk Honestly About Racism in America. Professor, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.